Warning, the Geek Cave can at times contain mature language and immature humor. Hey nerds, we understand you. Drop those controllers, lose the wizard hat, and ready your Cheetos. It's time for some hard-hitting talk about the movies, books, and games you love. So get ready, oh searcher of useless knowledge. It's time to step into the Geek Cave. Now, broadcasting from a top secret and totally awesome hidden base, I'm Ken Harris, and here's Darren Wright, Justin White, and Chad Savage.
And welcome to the Geek Cave podcast. I'm Darren.
I'm Justin.
I'm Chad.
All right, and coming up on the podcast this month,
in comics, we're talking about death.
Fun. In gaming, we'll be talking about the Wii U and whether or not it's actually the Dreamcast 2.
And in movies, we're talking Star Wars. Expanded Universe? Well, it's anything like my waistline. Ugh.
But first...
You and me both, brother.
But first, we wanted to, right off the bat, bring in our special guest this month. DK Podcast brought to you by BuzzTime and Shirtosaurus. Joining us now on the Geek Cave, let's just say that if you grew up in the 90s or you watched cartoons, even today, you're probably familiar with our next guest's work. He's one of the co-creators of Gargoyles. He's worked on Spectacular Spider-Man and Young Justice, and he's in the middle of a new project with Star Wars. Also, dipped his toes into the novel writing scene as well. Greg Wiseman joins us on the Geek Cave. Hey, Greg, thanks for joining us.
Hey, Darren, thanks for having me aboard.
I really appreciate you taking some time with us. So, you know, you've been kind of busy over the past couple decades or so, and a lot of our audience is, you know, in their late 20s, early 30s. They probably know you best for Gargoyles. So why don't we just kind of start down that road? I understand that Gargoyles is coming up on a big anniversary, right?
That's right. This year, we're celebrating Gargoyles' 20th anniversary. I'm sort of doing a little convention tour this year because a number of different conventions wanted to be part of that celebration. So various guests and I are going to Denver Comic Con, Convergence in Minneapolis, MechaCon in New Orleans, Long Beach Comic Con. A bunch of different places are celebrating that. It's pretty fun. You know, 20 years is a long time. It's neat that there's still fans around who want to celebrate the show.
Well, yeah, and, you know, not to make myself too much of a fanboy, but between you and Bruce Timm, my childhood was pretty much formed really good around DT stuff. Gargoyles is probably one of my favorite shows. What kind of impact does it have on you, knowing that 20 years later, people are still watching it, they're still interested in it, they're still reaching out and trying to, you know, to find out more about it?
You know, it's been great. I mean, the fans have really helped keep the flame alive. You know, for years we had Gargoyles conventions for a long time, and that was terrific, and I've made a lot of friends among Gargoyles fans, and, you know, I've tried my best to help keep interest high, and, you know, I never really give up on these shows. I'd love to do more Gargoyles someday. We did the Gargoyles comic books for a few years, and it was great, and so in one shape or form or another, I'd still love to bring Gargoyles back. I still think it's a great, viable property, and, you know, I had a blast doing it, probably the high point of my career.
Well, we love for you to bring Gargoyles back. Is there anything about the way Gargoyles wrapped up? Because I know that it kind of continued into the comics, but is there anything that you would have changed, anything you would add to maybe continue the storyline?
Oh, well, you know, we did two seasons. And then most everyone who was involved with the show left behind the scenes. And they did a third season without us that we don't talk about too much. And then I did sort of season three in comic book form years later for Slave Labor Graphics, and those are available as trade paperbacks on places like Amazon and stuff like that. But we had a lot of plans for Gargoyles. We had, you know, a half dozen spin-off series. You know, at one point we had marching orders from Michael Eisner to make sort of a whole superhero universe with Gargoyles sort of as the starting point. Think of it as the Fantastic Four of the Disney superhero universe. And then, you know, things changed and
wow,
that plan fell right wayside. But what that meant is that we had built a whole lot of different properties into Gargoyles, and there's a wealth of stories. And, of course, because the fans have kept my interest high in the show, I've continued to take notes on Gargoyles all this time. I have just literally, I've got notebooks full of story ideas for this show. I could never in my lifetime tell all the stories that we have for Gargoyles. We've got a timeline for this series that goes deep into the past and way out into the future. You know, one of the spinoffs was Gargoyles 2198, and
wow,
you know, pretty much endless. So we'd have a good time working on the show again if we got the chance.
Oh man, well, all right. The Deep Cave Twitter warriors, I hope you're listening. start tweeting to Disney like crazy, because that would be fantastic. I know I'd watch it. Now, you've also worked on Spectacular Spider-Man, Young Justice, and both of those series were really well received. You know, it seems that you really are able to connect with the audience as far as, you know, the comic book audience, especially when it comes to superheroes. Now, you say that Gargoyles is kind of like the high point of your career. Between Spectacular Spider-Man and Young Justice, was there anything about either of those that maybe you liked more than the other? Or if you don't want to get into a Marvel versus DC fight, I mean, what's just kind of your favorite memories of working on those?
Well, I mean, I had a great time working on both shows. I think Spectacular was probably easier.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a show with one lead. We had a huge cast of villains, supporting characters, all these characters from the Spider-Man corner of the Marvel Universe. But we only had to, you know, on an episodic basis, we only had to service one character absolutely, and that was Peter Parker. And everyone else sort of, you know, rotated or, I guess, revolved around that big star. Young Justice was harder because, you know, even at the beginning of the series, we had six leads. And as our series progressed, we kept adding characters. So it was a much more of a challenge to have multiple leads like that. Doing a team show is just harder than doing a single character show. But, you know, they were both very rewarding. I mean, the thing about all three of these shows that we brought up is, that I really should point out is that I was not a one-man show on any of them.
Right.
My partner on Gargoyles was Frank Parr. My partner on Spectacular Spider-Man was Vic Cook. And my partner on Young Justice was Brandon Vietti. Couldn't have done any of those shows without those guys. And, you know, and the two, even there, the two of us at the top couldn't have done it without, you know, a veritable army of cast and crew working with us to get the shows done. But they were, all three of those shows were really a blast to work on. You know, the reason I think those shows resonate with fans is probably because the people working on those shows, myself included, are huge geeks.
Yeah.
So, you know, if someone says, well, Spectacular was really a great interpretation of Spider-Man, how'd you do that? And I'm like, well, because I went back and I read Stan Lee, Steve Ditko, and Stan Lee and John Romita Sr. You know, I read those comic books, and we really tried to bring to life the very magic that attracted guys like me to Spider-Man in the first place is what we tried to achieve to attract a new generation to Spectacular Spider-Man on TV. And likewise with Young Justice, went back, read a lot of old Teen Titans issues, new Teen Titans issues, Young Justice issues, and and a lot in between. We really had marching orders on that show, not just to do a show about young superheroes, but to make that the tip of the iceberg and to really do a DC Universe show. And under the regime where that show originated, which has changed since then, those were the marching orders. What, you know, do a show about the whole DC Universe with the focus being on these young heroes.
Yeah.
And we sort of went from there. But again, you know, if it feels right, if it feels good, it's because, you know, all of us working on those series, you know, really care about this stuff.
Well,
just like the fans do.
Well, you and your whole team definitely nailed it on both of those. Just one thing that I know us at the Deep Cave, and we talked to Chris Jones about this as well, is just kind of sticking out as far as Young Justice goes, is Wally West. Can you tell us, if the series had continued, whether or not Wally would be brought back?
Well, I won't tell you.
Okay.
Because I have hopes that the series will come back. I mean,
right.
I haven't given up on Gargoyles 20 years out. I'm not going to give up on Young Justice 3 years out. So because of that, I'm not going to give major spoilers out like that. Not about Wally, not about any character. But, you know, we loved Wally. Jason Spezak's characterization of Wally was just fantastic. And he's a character that we're all tremendously fond of, but I'm not going to give spoilers up.
Okay, I respect that. Before we get into your latest project, I wanted to touch on you've been doing some writing. You've got one novel out, one novel on the way, right?
That's right. I wrote a book that came out this past December called Reign of the Ghosts. It's about a 13-year-old girl who lives on a chain of Caribbean islands called the Ghosts, or the Ghost Keys. And her parents work in the tourism industry, which means she works in the tourism industry. Her mom runs a bed and breakfast. Her dad runs a charter boat service. And even at age 13, she's already got multiple jobs, making beds, you know, serving food, cutting bait. And she just feels trapped. She feels like this is going to be her whole life. And as the book progresses, she finds out that there's more to her life. She's got a destiny. She can talk to dead people. That ability to talk to the ghosts means that she has a mission. And so the first book sort of starts her off on this mission, the first step of it. And then the second book, which is called Spirits of Ash and Foam, is coming out this July 8th. And it's the first two books of a 9-book series, and I've just had a blast. You know, I love collaborating with other people, but there's something to be said for just me and the blank page. And I've had a great time doing that on my own. So it'd be great if people went out, bought the books.
Sure, and we're going to put a link to both of those books at our site, geekcavepodcast.com. Finally, to wrap things up, we understand that you've been working with Lucasfilm. You're going to be the executive producer of a new Star Wars animated series. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, well, for starters, again, I'm one of three executive producers. The other two are Dave Filoni, who was the main guy on Star Wars, The Clone Wars.
Mm-hmm.
Simon Kinberg is the second executive producer, and Simon is a writer, producer of amazing feature films like X-Men First Class and the soon-to-be-released X-Men Days of Future Past, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, many, many other great movies that he's either produced, written, or both. So they're both fantastically talented individuals. Sort of came aboard on this terrific show, Star Wars Rebels, that they created. Those two guys created, but they brought me aboard to help sort of develop it and get it up and running.
Okay. Well, it's coming to Disney Channel. It's going to premiere this fall, and then the series will shift to Disney XD, as I understand. Can you tell us anything about the plot, what Star Wars Rebels is about, for anyone who maybe is uninitiated?
The basics are pretty straightforward. This series is set between Episode 3 and Episode 4, and closer in the timeline to Episode 4, that is the original Star Wars movie, A New Hope, which I saw in theaters when I was 13 years old, so this is fantastic for me.
Yeah.
The tone of it is very much the tone of A New Hope or of Empire Strikes Back, which are my two favorite Star Wars films. And it's about a close-knit group of rebels fighting against the Empire about 14 and a half years or so after the founding of the Empire.
Okay. Now, obviously, Star Wars is a pretty serious property, and I know a lot of people hold it really close to their hearts. Is there any, not consternation per se, but I mean, I know the team grasps the importance of the Star Wars franchise. Are there any thoughts about, you know, how do we get this just right? We don't want to upset anyone, anything like that?
Well, you know, mostly, all that's true. We, you know, but mostly our job is to just create a kick-ass show set in this universe. Dave is very much carrying the torch, Dave Filoni, of, you know, having done Clone Wars for the last 8 years, he's very much carrying the torch of making sure that this is truly Star Wars. We've got guys like Pablo Hidalgo working on the show, who is literally like a walking encyclopedia for the Star Wars universe. And we... You know, all that stuff matters to us a great deal. And so, you know, fans love the Clone Wars. Dave's still on this show. And I think they're going to love Rebels. And if people, you know, miss the Clone Wars, Rebels is a great place to jump aboard.
Okay, very cool. And again, that's Star Wars Rebels. It starts this fall. And, of course, we'll be putting a link up to all the information we can at geekcavepodcast.com. Not asking for any spoilers or anything, but will there be anything that maybe surprises longtime Star Wars fans? Maybe something they didn't expect to happen?
Well, yes. I think there'll be a lot of great stuff that they, that'll be terrific and on pretty much every level. I mean, we've introduced the six leads, the crew of the Ghost, which is the rebel ship that our action centers around. We've introduced one of the villains online, the Inquisitor. I think there's going to be a lot of great stuff, and some of it they'll go, "Oh yeah, that's so cool, we're going to see this finally," and then some of it will be, you know, kind of shocking, I think, but and everything in between.
Okay, very cool. Now, Greg, if people want to find out more about what you're working on, whether it's Star Wars Rebels, whether it's Reign of the Ghosts and Spirits of Ash and Foam, or you know, maybe they have a Gargoyles question or what have you, is there a good way for them to get a hold of you?
Yeah, the best way to ask me questions is to go to askgregweisman.com. That's askgregweisman. I've been answering questions there for over 15 years now. I fall behind sometimes. I think right now I'm answering questions from February of this year, so I'm a couple months behind. But I get to them all eventually. And there's some rules and guidelines there, so if they've got questions that they want answered in any kind of substantive way, that's the best place to check me out. Otherwise, if they just want to say hi or ask a very short question, they can reach me at Twitter, at Greg_Weisman, because I try to respond every day to all my Twitter followers who stop by and say hello. But again, if you've got a question to ask, it's really better to go to the Ask Greg Weissman website because, you know, 140 characters isn't a lot of space to answer a question. So that's a better place for that. But if you want to say hi or if you want to find out what I'm up to, then, you know, Twitter's a great. Follow me on Twitter.
Okay. All right, Greg Weissman, everyone, and we are definitely looking forward to finding out more about Star Wars Rebels. Thanks for joining us.
I had a great time. Thanks for having me on.
Greg Weissman, everybody.
Yay!
Can you believe that? and, of course, Star Wars Rebels. We'll post more info on that at geektapepodcast.com. When we come back, the actual show starts, so don't go anywhere.
Wait, that wasn't part of the show?
Well, that was part of the show, but that's like the bonus. You get a bonus segment right at the beginning.
Wow.
The rest of our normal show.
See, that's how much we love our fans. We give you dessert first.
Yeah. And now stay for the steak and potatoes and whatever it is I'm talking about.
Got an hour? We'll waste it.
If you've heard of Ocarina of Time at all, you know that this is one of the greatest games ever made.
It's pronounced Ocarina?
Yeah. I thought it was Okra of Time.
That explains why you didn't like the game as much.
This isn't your creepy uncle's comic book shop. This is the Geek Cave. Downloading a new episode each month on iTunes and Podbean.com. The Geek Cave Podcast, now powered by BuzzTime and Shirtosaurus.com. Follow Geek Cave Podcast on Twitter for BuzzTime and Shirtosaurus giveaways.
And welcome back to the Geek Cave Podcast. I'm Darren.
I'm delighted.
I'm Chad.
Certainly.
Geek Cave Podcast brought to you by Shirtosaurus and BuzzTime. Our giveaway this month is a digital copy of Justice League War. The latest in the DC animated universe.
Or.
Which actually, they're starting their own cinematic universe with this movie.
Yes.
So you get in on the ground floor. We'll have the giveaway at facebook.com/geekcave. So make sure that you find us and both like and follow on Facebook. You have to. It's a two-step approach now.
We're not doing this one on Twitter like we did the last one?
This time we're doing it on Facebook, actually.
Cool.
So, but all of our Facebook posts also go to Twitter.
Well, that is true.
But yeah, this time the good folks who have provided this copy for us say, let's do it on Facebook. And so I'm like, okay, so Facebook.com.
Whatever, we do what you want.
/Geek Cave. Comics.
Yes. So as I mentioned earlier, we are going to be talking about death.
Sounds fun.
Or in some cases, the lack thereof.
Mm.
Mostly concerning one Richard Dick Grayson.
Ah.
Yes.
He's a Richard.
Yes, he is. For months with Forever Evil and the closing of the Nightwing title, people have been wondering what the heck is going to happen to Dick at the end of all this. Is he going to die? Is he not going to die? What's going to happen? You know, we all know Dan Didio has a hard-on to get rid of Dick Grayson. He's had this since Infinite Crisis. And it's just... You know, why do you want to kill off a beloved character?
Why do you hurt the ones we love?
Exactly. Why do you hurt the ones we love? Very nice. Very nice. Well, as it turns out, Dick Grayson will not be dying.
Oh, good.
Yeah, we've talked. I mean, this is nothing new. This isn't, you know, breaking news, unfortunately. I wish we could give breaking news.
Well... That's what the Skype cast is for.
This is true.
This is kind of like a summary of like crap that went down for the prior month and crap that's coming up.
Yeah. You know, Dick Grayson's secret identity was exposed to the world, and you know, everybody's wondering what's going to happen. Well, apparently he's kind of going underground. He's working for a spy agency, Spiral, S-P-Y-R-A-L, an organization.
Spiral, yeah.
Yeah, an organization created by writer Grant Morrison for his Batman Incorporated series. So he's basically going to be Dick Grayson, International Man of Mystery.
Nice.
The Robin Who Shagged Me. Gold Robin. From Robin with Love.
Okay. Robin Fall.
Robin Hard.
Casino Robin.
Casino. Yeah. Robin Raker.
Starfire galore.
the man with the golden robin. So he is getting his own, and he's getting his own series. Grayson.
Ooh, golden egg.
Golden egg.
And you can have Jason Todd being one of the movies and call it Die Another Day.
Oh, this is great. I love this.
Yeah. I think we just lost Chad. That was so bad.
This warms the cockles of my heart.
Hold on. We're going to call Chad back, folks. Oh. It was so bad, Chad just hung up on us.
In case you missed it, Chad is on the satellite. I love this month, folks.
Yeah. We're leaving this in post-production.
Oh,
by the
yeah.
Way.
Yeah. Yeah. Who cares?
Chad.
This is how we roll, folks.
Man, tough crowd. I wonder if we're having problems with our connectivity.
That is a problem, yeah. It's raining outside, folks, so Lord knows what's happening to the interwebs. They're getting all
Hello.
Wet and stuff. There you are.
Chad's back. Yeah, we were just telling our audience how you're on the satellite of love, and apparently the James Bond jokes were so bad you just quit.
Well, at Robin Raker, apparently, space got offended.
Space is pissed. Anyway, continue.
So, yeah, so, you know, the Nightwing series has ended, but Dick Grayson lives on in his new series, Grayson, set to premiere July 2nd.
All right.
So, look out for that. Also on the topic of death... Wolverine.
You know, technically, Wolverine has died plenty of times.
Well, technically, but now...
He always has a sword fight with death in order to come back.
Ah. Yeah, but you see, now his healing factor is gone.
Aw, so it's like the 90s again.
Yeah. And Marvel is gearing up for...
So it's more like Marvel then.
Yeah. Marvel then.
When... Then.
Yeah.
That's my new favorite joke.
All right.
Soon.
Later.
So, you know, with Wolverine's healing factor now gone, Marvel is gearing up for the new Wolverine summer storyline, 3 months to die.
Yep. That's a thing.
That's a thing, folks. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Right after the movie.
Yep. Wolverine may or may not die and may or may not be gone forever.
Well, the writer... Charles Stoll says this will be the definitive end of the character. Kind of like how Geoff Johns' Volume 3 of Green Lantern, after they switched over to New 52, is the definitive end of Green Lantern. We get the end of the story, but then the next book just picks up, you know, modern day anyway. So maybe that's what they mean. I really doubt they're going to keep Wolverine dead. I mean, remember what they said that Peter Parker was going to be gone forever?
Yeah.
Yeah, that went really well, didn't it?
Yeah, nothing but a bunch of Peter teases. See, and that only works for Peter Parker. I can't say a Logan tease. I mean, that's stupid. Even for me.
Yeah.
And I have standards,
I kind of like the idea of the story, though. Like, all of Wolverine's enemies find out, oh, wait, his healing factor's gone?
Yep.
And I can imagine a man like Wolverine has pissed off quite a lot of people.
Yeah, I mean, the first image in The Death of Wolverine, number one, shows him in a less than ideal situation.
Yeah.
He's kind of slumped over on the porch. His clothes are in tatters. He looks like he's about to he's just mentally, screw it, I'm done.
He's done.
He's done with everything.
Alt F4.
Yes. So look for that coming soon. I don't know... The Death of Wolverine hits September 3rd, and it concludes with number 4 on September 24th.
Yeah, it's going to be a weekly series.
Weekly series, 4 issues, so... And not a lot to talk about in comic books. I mean, they're still... Marvel is still winding up for their Original Sin series. Everybody's got one.
And, you know, that actually looks like a pretty good idea. I really want to know what Captain America's Original Sin was.
Oh, yeah. And, yeah, I mean,
And, you know, if you've been following the X books, it's pretty obvious that, like,
I mean, you know that a lot of the X-Men are flawed, obviously, but there are some of these so-called untouchable characters, like Stephen Strange, and, you know, I guess his original sin goes back to Civil War when they were, like, keeping prisoners in a pocket dimension or stuff like that.
I guess.
But I really want to see people's reaction to those
sins.
Yeah,
I mean, Daredevil is going to have an original sin. I mean, and the cover of his, or the teaser image, is a bunch of nuns standing around with one nun in particular who's, you know, drawn in detail. The rest of them are just kind of grayish figures. One nun particularly drawn in detail holding a baby with red hair. So is Daredevil's mother a nun?
Mm. Good question.
You know, they're teasing images that Tony Stark's original sin and Bruce Banner's original sin are connected. You know, did Tony have a hand in the creation of the Hulk?
That may have been.
You know, whether it was intentional or not, you know.
Hail Hydra.
Hail Hydra. Mail Oprah!
We'll talk about that in the TV segment. Yes, we will. Because it's... Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has really picked up. And we'll talk about that.
Yeah.
Business is picking up.
Yeah. But, I mean, you know, they're still gearing up for that. It hasn't happened yet.
Well, it's this summer.
It's the summer. Yeah, they're gearing up for the big summer thing, so... So the last bit of news I've got is DC Comics has had some weekly series going, especially revolving around Earth 2. That's all coming to an end.
Okay.
Because they want to start gearing up for their First Contact and Batman Eternal, which is already kicked off, and that is going to be a weekly series.
And we did talk about First Contact last month and that they're just kind of running it out of order willy-nilly as they see fit.
Yeah. But, it looks like they're going to bring the Earth 2 storyline to an end. I don't know if completely or if it's going to go on hiatus, but it's going to stop so that they can gear up for their next big thing, which, of course, is a Batman thing.
Yeah, you know, of course.
Go figure.
Now, I do have a couple of things to share, but Chad, before the show, we were talking about how you've got some opinions of your own about this whole Death of Wolverine thing.
I do. I do have opinions. Would you like me to share some of them?
Yes, please.
Please do.
Ah, I said that it's very rare that you have a good guy who really is kind of eternal. I mean, you have all kinds of villains that can't be killed, but very rarely do you have a good guy who is actually kind of all-powerful in terms of his length of life. And so it seems silly to remove that from Wolverine. It would be far more effective, in my opinion, to make him face defeat over and over again. You know, to put him in a position where he cannot win. You know, put two ex-girlfriends and one of them is going to die, no matter what. And so he has to live with that. Or to have somebody who can get into his head and make him and force him to basically relive and remember every failure he ever had. Or every person that he outlived because he's 300 years old. You know, and have to live with that kind of survivor's guilt. Something that I don't really think that they've dealt with well. Occasionally they have, especially with any time Jean Grey's died.
Yeah. Well, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but at one point in the comics, didn't Wolverine get all of his memories back?
He did. After the House of M and the Avengers disassembled... kind of whole thing.
And those weren't taken away again later.
No, they weren't.
So, I mean, he's already kind of lived with survivor's guilt. I mean, especially all in one blow. Here's everything that you ever forgot about your past life.
Yeah. It's,
mm-hmm. Deal with it.
It was one of the very few positives that came out of the Scarlet Witch going crazy.
Yeah, true.
Is that Wolverine got his past back.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure it wasn't touched on very much, so this would be...
Well, it had its own book for like a year.
Oh, okay.
It was called...
Cool, then.
Yeah. I don't know if it was called Origins, or it was something where Wolverine readopted the brown suit and went out to just kind of settle old scores. Yeah.
No, it wasn't Oranges.
Oranges. It wasn't Oranges, that's for sure.
It wasn't Oranges, folks. It was Bananas.
Well, it wasn't Wolverine Origin, because that obviously told a story, but yeah. I feel it was something along those lines, like Legends or something like that. One of those, here's a catchphrase that we can put at the end of the title and make it different kind of thing, so...
Like, Wolverine getting his shit together.
Yeah, I mean, it's like Wolverine resolution or something stupid. Now, I don't know.
Rewind. Now.
Then. And later. All right, well, Chad, do you have anything else comic-wise?
I do.
Okay.
Would you like to hear it?
Yes, I would. Please.
Okay, you guys have heard of Van Jensen, right? He writes for the Green Lantern Corps, The Flash.
Yeah,
yeah.
Okay. Do you know what he started with?
Mm.
Okay, so he's got a soft cover graphic novel coming out for in June of 2014 for about 528-page omnibus.
Okay.
And I want you to imagine a dark street, okay? A vampire is on the prowl looking for a victim. And he comes across a small figure bundled up from the cold in a lonely alley.
Okay.
He grabs up the child and bites, and all we see is the word thunk. He hurls the figure to the ground and exclaims, "You're no child." The figure arises, says, "I am a real boy." Breaks off his nose and stabs the vampire, declaring, "And you are my prey."
You found it.
Yes.
When vampires come to his village and kill Geppetto, Pinocchio discovers a new use for his magic nose. He tells lies so he has an unending supply of wooden stakes. Yes, Pinocchio Vampire Slayer is coming in June for $25.
Yes. Oh, wow.
I brought this to everyone's attention a long time ago on the podcast.
Yeah.
And I am so glad to hear that, Chad. You've made my day.
Oh, good deal.
Thank you, sir.
He is in space, so he could probably he probably had more resources at his disposal to find it.
That's true, yeah.
My spouse also saw it, and she said, "I kind of want it."
I kind of do, too.
Yeah.
All right. I said, I have a hard time saying no to books. You know, you want a book? Sure.
Yeah.
We can always find money in the budget for books. Find them for video games or movies? No, but books? Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's fair. And Darren, do you have anything for comics?
I do.
I've got something related to books in general. So
I've got a couple of things for comics. Both of them are related to All New X-Men, which I have been steadily working my way through. You remember they were part of the Marvel Now initiative. Long story short, Beast from the present goes into the past to get the original X-Men to fix stuff in the present. He wants them to remind Cyclops of where they came from and how he's kind of a dick right now, for lack of a better term. And I've just finished volume 3 really completing the first big story arc in the series. And I reviewed the first issue and I said, I don't know, it's kind of an all right jumping on point, but there's a lot of unanswered questions. I will amend that by saying it's very good. I recommend it if you are an X-Men fan and you've always wanted to look at some place to jump on. Justin, I know one of your problems with the X-Men franchise is that it feels just like oppression constantly.
Yeah, it's very heavy-handed with,
Yeah.
Prejudice.
Yeah. Well, that's not the case in All New X-Men. In fact, in All New X-Men, you'll find a lot of people are kind of accepting of mutants and it's got more room for humor, specifically because Wolverine and Kitty Pryde are professors trying to teach the new X-Men, the original X-Men, kind of teach them what this world is like and that kind of thing. And seeing a full-size adult Wolverine chase down Cyclops, who'd went for a joyride in his Jeep, is hilarious.
Nice.
And is well worth it. I can't spoil anything, but I'm just saying the humor is top-notch. It's very well done. I really like how Jean Grey gets kind of some forced character development because she comes from the past and she realizes what's going to happen to her.
Ooh.
She finds out about everything because her powers really start growing exponentially. And at one point, she's actually able to conjure up, seemingly conjure up the Phoenix at will.
Huh.
So it's a very interesting story arc. Jean is probably the best character in All New X-Men because she's got, her motivations are clear. You can really see how this would mess with a teenager, with a 16-year-old.
Yeah.
Finding out your destiny, finding out who you were going to marry, finding out how you die, all of these things. So it's really well done. I highly recommend it. Now, All New X-Men has also been known as where Wolverine's clone daughter gets busy with every member of the team. Because a while back we posted an image of X-23 making out with Cyclops.
Mm-hmm.
Now she's making out with Angel.
Mm-hmm.
$5 says that she's going to move right through the team.
until she gets Jean Grey, and then Marvel has a problem on their hands, because do they want to? I want them to, but do they want to?
I don't think it's a problem.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying it's a problem for me, but that's going on. Also, and I guess this also falls in television, but has to do with Batman. So it's kind of under both comics and Batman banners. Beware the Batman is briefly returning.
Yes.
It was canceled, and then Cartoon Network decided to put it on Toonami. However, you have to watch it 2 in the morning on Saturdays in order to see the final 11 episodes.
Yeah, still not...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know, it's just, it's a controversial series. You know, whether you like it or you don't, that's up to you. But if you want to find it, that's where you can find it.
I mean, I guess I can give Cartoon Network props for saying, okay, we'll let you finish off the series.
Yeah.
But
putting it at 2 a.m. is kind of a jerk move.
Yeah, but at the same time, it's like, why couldn't you give Young Justice?
I know.
That kind of, I don't care. If it was on at 2 a.m., I'm sure people would have TiVo'd it.
I would have DVR'd the heck out of it.
Yeah.
You know?
And watched it later. It's just, yeah.
Well, and this is speculation, but it seems like the same thing that happened to Beware the Batman is what happened to Young Justice. You know, your toys aren't moving.
Well, yeah, when your Batman looks like he has no forehead.
Or, you know, circulatory system.
Yeah, there's that.
CGI's hard. I can't do it. But some would argue neither can they.
Lot would argue that.
And that's mean, because Beware the Batman does have some talented people working on it. It's just, you know, it is what it is. You either like it or you don't.
Yeah.
It's pretty much that it. So, Chad, do you have anything else?
No, I've pretty much spent my load now.
Okay.
Do you need a cigarette?
No.
Okay.
All right.
Last bit of news I've got for comics. It's not even really comics, just books in general. Chad, you said that you can always find money in the budget for books.
Just about.
Books are good.
Most of the time.
Most of the time, yes, books are good. And so it always pisses me off when these groups come in and challenge books for whatever reason. And, you know, the various library associations get together and they release the list of top 10 banned or challenged books in public libraries and such. And, you know, as usual, Captain Underpants makes number one.
Of course.
For dumb reasons.
Yeah. But this year, number 10 really pissed me off. Number 10 for 2013 was Bone by Jeff Smith.
Really?
Yes.
I saw that.
Yes.
I saw that had made the How? Top 10.
For, let's see, for Violence and I think Prejudice.
Hmm.
Now, admit, you know, okay, I guess there's some violence. There's a war that happens in it. I guess you could say there's prejudice because there's, you know, factions fighting each other and they don't like each other. But this is a book that has dragons and rat creatures and, you know, the main title character, Bone, his name is Phone Bone. He's a small little white creature.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing sexual in calling them bones. That's just what they are. You know,
he's a walking bone.
Pretty much. Yeah. Except, you know, he's got, you know, tissue. I don't know. They never explain what he is. He's just this small, goofy little bald white creature and his cousins who are equally bald and white, you know, but this is a fantasy. It's a graphic novel fantasy. There's nothing in this that says you need to be removed from a library.
Right.
This is the... I mean, obviously, certain books don't belong in certain libraries. I would not want to see the graphic novel Mouse, M-A-U-S, and a grade school, elementary school library.
Right.
I mean, yes, it's a depiction of World War II and the Holocaust, and it's a very intriguing story. It's a story that needs to be told, but not on that level. Now, it's certainly the kind of thing I would love to see in high school libraries, certainly college libraries, public libraries, because it is a story that needs to be told. It's told very graphically, not just because it's a graphic novel, but there are some very, you know,
yeah, but it's not in the children's section.
Not in the children's section, obviously. Right. Bone is one of those, okay, it's probably not appropriate for young audiences, but by the time you hit middle school, you should be able to determine, oh, this has got a dragon in it. This is probably considered fantasy,
yeah.
And there's going to be some elements in here that aren't real, and I should not, you know, base my life off of them. So it just bothers me that these people have nothing better to do with their time than... And first off, they have to read these books to begin with to figure out, oh, okay, well, on page 456, there's a reference to, you know, sex. Oh, my God. You know.
OMG. The
yeah.
thing that put us all here.
Yeah. I mean, it's like these people have nothing better. I'm glad they're reading books. That's the only way they figure this out. They're obviously well-read people. I mean, they read a lot of
Thank
stuff.
Thank goodness that they're reading.
Exactly. Yeah, but...
They're just doing it wrong.
I mean, do you have nothing better to do with your time than to... ban books.
Think of the children, Jed and Justin.
Yeah, I mean, this is you know, these
people... I am thinking of the children. That's why I told my spouse that once our daughter reaches school age, any book that gets banned or challenged through the school, we will personally buy. Mm. She doesn't have to read it, but she'll at least have that option to read it.
And I am all for that. I mean, as soon as I saw that Bone hit the most challenged list at number 10, I'm like, you know what? I'm reading it again.
Yeah.
I was in the middle of another book. I put it down and picked Bone back up and started reading it to see just exactly what they were referring to. And yeah, there's violence, and who gives a crap? Lord of the Rings has violence in it, and that's never challenged.
Yeah.
The Bible has violence in it.
Reading it.
But there are no pictures. And that's, I guess, what they're getting at.
No.
I don't agree with them.
No, because, you know, books like 50 Shades of Grey made the list.
Yeah, I know.
There's no pictures in that, thankfully.
Well, that's a mommy book.
I know, but it still made the list.
I know, it's
And again,
stupid.
Yeah, that's not the kind of book you want in a school library.
I don't
but
think
a public
any,
library, sure.
I don't think any books should be banned. Now, if you're planning witchcraft, just get it from the appropriate section.
They have an occult section. It's generally in the back. You know, it's where all the moody kids hang
Dusty,
out.
Dusty, you know. Get the big book of monsters. Be sure to stroke the spine before you open it. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's say the words correctly. Klaatu Varata necktie.
Something Vishnu, something, something, Cthulhu, something, something, SARS. I don't know.
Yeah, SARS. Wow. Way to be topical, Darren.
Yeah. Hey, you know, maybe I can bring the word back. I don't know.
There you go. Hey, what's the word?
The bird. Everybody knows that.
Everybody knows that, yeah.
On the bright side, the number of challenges was way down this year.
Yeah.
Well, okay.
Like 157 fewer challenges.
Well, that's good. But still, it's annoying because these people with the mindset of, oh, we need to ban books so that nobody reads them. That's, in my mind, that's one step away from, we need to burn these books
yeah.
so that nobody reads them.
America.
Yeah, America. More like Nazi Germany.
Yeah.
So that's my little rant. That's my little soapbox.
Right.
Books should not be banned. They should be embraced. If you don't want to read it, don't read it.
Yeah, it's pretty simple.
Yeah, it's like music. I personally don't like country music, so guess what? I don't listen to it. I don't like rap music, so guess what? I just don't listen to it.
Yeah.
You are free to listen to it if that is what you choose.
You can't tell me what I'm free to do or not do.
Yes, I can. It's America. It's a free country. I can tell you what you're free to do and not do.
Well, and I don't have to hear it.
Exactly, and that is your right.
This session of debate class is brought to you by BuzzTime and Shirtosaurus. All right, we'll take a quick
great
break.
Great minds argue alike. Well, actually, no, they don't. They argue separate points completely.
But all great minds drink alike.
Yes, there you go.
And they wear really awesome shirts. Shirts from the past.
To make you look rad today.
Yes. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll talk about gaming. Looks like Microsoft is actually losing.
Now, gamings, those should be banned. Those.
The Xbox One is actually losing one title. PS4 is gaining some kind of capabilities that they should have had from the beginning. We got to look at the sales numbers, and the Wii U, less said about that, the better. Which is why we're going to talk about it at length. In the world is in San Diego.
Hey gamers, here's what you've been missing. If you're not listening to the Nightcast...
Yeah, screw Grand Theft Auto 5. We've got Grand Theft Auto Farm. Hello.
God damn it, my goddamn goddamn microphone fell over.
Yeah, I started a character, and I've been playing the same character probably over 250 or 300 hours now.
I don't know what happened, but we have Satan on Skype. Satan, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
Well, we got you on the line before things get crossed over again. I have a couple questions. If you can you answer them for me?
I made the Xbox One.
You did what?
You made
the Xbox One?
Xbox One. Piece of shit.
Which console do you think is gonna be the dominant console on Black Friday?
The Wii U.
The Wii U?
Sugar DVD. It is, they just released that PS4 users beat out Xbox One users for being the number one porn watching console.
Congratulations.
For all of this and more, head to 9nights.net for all the links you'll ever need. And don't forget to subscribe to the Nightcast on iTunes.
The Geek Cave Podcast, now powered by BuzzTime. And Shirtosaurus.com. Follow Geek Cave Podcast on Twitter for BuzzTime and Shirtosaurus giveaways.
And welcome back to the Geek Cave Podcast. I'm Darren.
I'm Justin.
I'm Chad.
It's a gaming segment. Yay, games! Woot. Everybody loves them. Except for the people that don't. Which probably aren't listening to this podcast anyway.
I like Parcheesi.
Okay, that's fine. That's a game. Counts. It counts. You can come on in. Again, Geek Cave Podcast brought to you by Shirtosaurus and BuzzTime. We will be doing a giveaway during the month of May of Justice League War, the animated kickoff to the DC animated universe, a cinematic universe. You can find out more at facebook.com/Geek Cave or follow us on Twitter at Geek Cave Podcast. So I've got a few things for gaming. First of all, who here shops at GameStop?
Occasionally.
Yeah. If I could make cricket noises with my mouth, I would.
Okay, so you don't.
Not if I can help it.
Yeah, I mean, I do, mostly because usually it's the easiest way to get a hold of a Steam gift card in my town. But, you know, I will peruse GameStop. Nothing wrong with perusing. I mean, people don't like the pressure to pre-order, but easiest thing to do is to say no. You know, well, apparently that's what GameStop's own owners are saying to about 130 stores. Is
nope.
No, as in they're closing them down.
Ooh.
Yeah. See, with smartphone gaming and tablets and, you know, Android and iOS really catching fire, GameStop is now going to start focusing very heavily on development on the mobile side. They're talking their own apps, their own games, selling mobile games, that kind of thing. But it also means that they're going to cut staff. A lot of staff. 130 stores in the U.S. Granted, they have 10,000. But still, 130 stores, which means a lot of people are going to be finding themselves on the unemployment line very, very soon. So
yet another reason why I don't like GameStop.
Well, that happens with a lot of businesses.
I know it does, but I didn't like them to begin with, so this is just one more log on the fire.
Yeah. See, I picked up a relatively new game for the PS3 recently. How do I start this review? Final Fantasy X HD is still ridiculous.
Gee, you think?
HD could not make it made it prettier, and I still let me say I love Final Fantasy X. It's in my top 10 of all time list. But God, do I hate the main character. It's like they took Justin Bieber, gave him a whiny Pee Wee Herman type voice, and then threw him into a fantasy landscape with dragons and magical soccer underwater and this chick who can send spirits to the afterlife and another one who wears a fur dress that I'm not sure how it stays on. I mean, the laws of physics, I just don't understand it. But it's still really good. It's fun. It's back when Final Fantasy was pretty darn good. Justin, I know the wheels are turning.
Yeah, I'm still trying to wrap my head around Justin Bieber doing a whiny Pee Wee Herman voice.
I would actually just play the audio from the laughter, but I don't want to scare anyone off. No, Final Fantasy X HD is really pretty. It pretty much just, it's the Final Fantasy you remember. They didn't really make any tweaks that would hurt the game. The game itself is pretty good. You just got to remember that voice acting 10 years ago, 12 years ago, 2001, 2002, not as good as voice acting today by any stretch of the imagination.
Wait, when was this game released?
2001, originally.
Okay, we should... Video game voice acting.
Yes.
Because I cartoons are one of my beloved hobbies. I like to watch cartoons. I listen to voice actors when they talk and stuff. Professional voice actors were just as good back then.
Okay.
Let's put it that way.
Duly noted. Duly noted. PlayStation Plus is getting a few new games. For the PS4, you're getting the indie title Stick It to the Man, which, I'm sorry, looks kind of boring. It's a point-and-click kind of adventure game. It involves a guy who can, like, manipulate stuff with his brain. Sounds fun, but I've seen it in action. Not really that impressed. I think the biggest problem with PlayStation Plus and the PS4 is that while Sony is pushing for nothing but indie titles for your free titles, and that's good that they've got indie support, you really need to start thinking about throwing one of your major titles in. Because it started off great. You know, you had Rezodon, and you had, you know, Dead Nation, and, oh, what was the free game for April? Mercenary Kings. But sometimes your games are not that great. Outlast was good, but it's one of those, I don't like games that make me want to wet the bed, so I'm not going to play Outlast ever again. That kind of thing. PS3 users are getting Skullgirls, which is pretty sweet. It's a fighting game with some really heavy anime stylings. PS Vita users are getting Limbo, which is a fantastic platformer, but the only colors you see are dark and darker. It's a game played almost entirely in shadow,
yeah,
if you will.
Yeah.
And we've got the full list at DTapePodcast.com. It's just DTapePodcast.com, and then when you see the search bar, just type in gaming. Boom, all of our gaming content right there. Easy.
Woot.
Easy peasy. And finally, I don't have too much else for gaming. Just the latest sales numbers. So from all that we've heard about Wii U, PS4, and Xbox One, what do you think number one would be?
Number one, I would probably say the PS4.
And number two?
The Xbox One.
Number one is PS4. Xbox One is number three.
So number two is ColecoVision.
No, number two is the Wii U somehow. Now, granted, the Wii U had like a year-long head start. But the PS4 is right now sitting at about 7 million units sold. The Xbox One, 4.5. The Wii U at 6, which sounds good, until you realize one thing. At the same point in its lifespan, the Dreamcast had sold 12 million units.
Who?
Which means the Dreamcast, the last great console from Sega, that was, some would argue, killed off ahead of its time.
Including yourself.
Yeah. Has sold double at the same point in time as the Wii U. That's not a good number.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I mean, for a peripheral, that's good.
It's not a peripheral. That's the problem.
And I'm never going to get tired serious of saying about that. Well, I'm being serious about that. It is troubling news because when you look at basically the global install base, you have the original Wii at over 100 million.
I know. It was crazy popular.
Oh, my God, yes.
I mean, and
we each have one, so.
Yeah. And the Xbox 360 and the PS3 each sitting at, like, 80 million.
Yeah.
I mean, they never did completely catch up. And to now have the Wii U after 11 months only having 4 million. You know, 3.91 million.
Right.
And it's only beating the Xbox One
barely
by a million.
Yeah.
The Xbox One's only been out for 6 weeks, 8 weeks.
Oh, it's been out since November.
Okay. So so about 6 months now.
Yeah.
And the PS4 has beaten it after the same amount of time.
Oh yeah. Badly.
It's troublesome.
It is, especially if you're a Nintendo.
It's very troublesome for Nintendo, especially when you consider the quality that Nintendo demands of not only its games, but its consoles.
And I think it really...
For first party.
Yeah, and I think maybe that might have... Obviously, the big reason that this is a problem for Nintendo is marketing.
Yeah.
They didn't just come out and call it something like the Wii 2 or something like that. And when you have a console prior where there are a whole lot of games and a whole lot of peripherals that start with the word Wii, so Wii Fit, Wii Party, Wii, you know, whatever, you know, the Wii Blaster, you know, the Wii Dance Pad or whatever have you. So when people see Wii U, all they're thinking is, oh, is that like that U-Draw tablet that they released on the PS3? Now it's come to the Wii? Because that's pretty much what...
Yeah, it's what everybody thought.
And still a year later, a lot of people are still coming to me and saying, I didn't know the Wii U was a separate console. And that is a big problem.
Yeah.
And Nintendo's refusal to change that. Because when they first announced this at E3 a few years ago, not even the gaming journalists were 100% sure that it was a console. Some people thought it was just a tablet. When the people who cover your business and the entire industry within cannot tell, there's a problem that you should have fixed.
An absolute problem.
Yeah. So now here we are, the Wii U, in the same amount of time span as the Dreamcast, sold half what the Dreamcast did.
So earlier when you said if the Wii 2 was the second...
The Wii U was the Dreamcast 2,
The Dreamcast 2? I'm going to say no.
It's more like the Saturn.
Yes.
Which is unfortunate. Because the Wii U does have some good games. It doesn't have enough system sellers. And they keep saying, oh, you know, Mario Kart's coming later on in the month of May. And they keep saying, okay, yeah, we're working on Bayonetta 2. We're not going to tell you when it's coming yet. We're working on X, the, you know, the big, you know, Final Fantasy meets Gundam game, but we're not telling you when that's coming yet either. No, you need to start telling people, because your biggest release for Christmas was Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze. Who gets excited about Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze?
About half a dozen of the kids at my church.
Okay. There you go. Six kids.
From a small town in Iowa.
I don't get that excited about it. Donkey Kong Country was great. We need something else. We need something. Mario 3D World was fantastic. The games that Nintendo has released that have hit the mark brilliantly. The problem is we have to wait like a half year in between those. And consumers have a very short memory. Especially in the gaming industry. They're always about, what are you doing for me now? Not what have you done for me. The 3DS is like the only thing keeping Nintendo in the green right now. Because it's like a crazy success. No one thought it would. Just like when the DS launched against the original Vita. No one thought it would. But consoles is something different. It seems like Nintendo just can't figure out how to keep third parties on board. And they just can't figure out how to keep their base interested anymore.
Well, I think Nintendo ended up making the same mistake that Xbox One did. Or Xbox One made the same mistake that the Wii U did. It made things harder to code for.
Yeah.
The Wii was a very, in terms of its construction, a very simple system. Anybody could feasibly make a game with it. And the Wii U became much more complicated.
Yeah, but you know, the Wii U was supposed to be, you know, to kind of even the playing field with the PS3 and the Xbox 360 and be kind of...
Well, then they should have released it 4 years earlier.
Oh, I agree. And now Nintendo's kind of in a corner where, do you really want to stick with the Wii U for the rest of this generation? Because every third-party developer that you had has jumped ship. Or they delayed, or they've just outright canceled titles.
Yep.
Well, and I kind of hate to say it, but Nintendo may be better served by just saying, okay, well, we can either begin to seriously support it and throw a lot of stuff at it at the expense of the 3DS, which is also, it's doing well, but it's not doing as well as the DS did. You know, it's also kind of suffering because the 3D effect, while cool, isn't really necessary.
Well, that's why they released the 2DS.
Yeah. And I think that actually sold less well than the 3DS.
Well, it's Nintendo doesn't know how to name things.
Yeah.
Because every week I will overhear like a conversation between a parent and kid where a kid will say something along the lines of, "Ooh, I want a 3DS." And the parent will say, "You have a DS." They don't understand. Mm-hmm. It's a newer system. It's newer hardware. It's more powerful. All they see is it still says DS in the bloody title, mm-hmm. you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, and I get you want your brand to be, you know, easily unified and recognizable, but Sony and Microsoft don't have that problem because it's PlayStation and then a different number, or Xbox and then a really stupid word, or whatever have you, but people know that's a different part of the Xbox brand. When they see the Wii U and the 3DS, they think that's just another DS, or that's just another Wii. And yep. That's the big problem here. Well, and that and the fact that third parties jumped ship, I think, too early with the Wii U. They left before it had a time to really gain an install base. It's got 6 million customers. You mean to tell me that people are not going to buy games for it?
Apparently not.
Well,
they can't buy what's not there, you know?
Exactly.
Well, I certainly agree with you on that run.
Yeah.
My spouse and I were very seriously considering getting the Wii U, especially when we saw the Zelda Wind Waker HD. Now, I have Zelda Wind Waker on the GameCube, mm-hmm. and I play it on the Wii. I love it. Love it. It is my favorite of the Zelda games to play.
It's pretty fun on the Wii U as well.
And I'm absolutely certain that it is, and I'm glad that they reduced Tingle's, you know, involvement things.
They did that. They gave you the fast sail, so sailing's faster. It's really good.
I mean, Tingle was the only dark spot in that whole game as far as I was concerned.
Tingle's the dark spot in a lot of things.
But when we were looking at what else we would be willing to really play and invest in, it was all first-party stuff. There was nothing third-party-wise that said, "Oh, well, yeah. You know, Batman Arkham City is supposed to be better on the Wii U." Well, but we've already got it on the PlayStation, so why do I want to buy the game again?
Right.
Later.
And I think that part of that is Nintendo believing kind of what everyone online has been saying, is that, well, I just buy a Nintendo system for the Nintendo titles. Nintendo, you can't do that. You can't just make yourselves like a leapfrog where there's only like that content for that device. You can't do that.
No.
Well, you can, but you've got to put out, you know, 2 games a month.
Yeah, at least. You've got to make the games.
Now, they've got a strong indie presence, but again, a lot of people who buy, historically, who buy Nintendo products don't necessarily care about the online function. They don't care about the digital titles. They want something they own. You know, physically, not just, "Oh, I bought a license for it," you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
And another, this recently was announced that Smash Brothers, that's supposed to be like a big system seller for the Wii U, it's coming out for the 3DS as well. 3DS is getting it 6 months before the Wii U.
Well, thank goodness. Why? I still don't have to buy a Wii U.
Exactly. Yeah, why in the world would you dimp your own system like that?
Yeah, I got no clue. I mean, that's... What?
Yeah. Smash Brothers for the 3DS is hitting this summer. Smash Brothers for the Wii U, same game, development at the same time, just prettier, is hitting in winter.
Did they run out of pretty sticks to beat it with, and they had to go fetch more? I mean,
I don't get it.
I don't understand computer graphics and computer, you know, coding. So I assume it's all done with magic and sorcery.
I use the layers and the texture.
I mean, how else can you shrink a full-size man down to something that fits inside a little disc and put in the...
Sorcery.
Yeah, sorcery, see?
Well, now it's digital, so he just gets sent over your internet.
Nice.
Maybe. It's just, Nintendo, I know that there are a couple people who work at Nintendo that actually listen to this podcast. Please pass this advice along to your superiors. And if they get mad, say, "Hey, just get mad at 3 guys in the Midwest who want you to do well."
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty much it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, we got pretty broad shoulders for that kind of thing.
We can take it.
Yeah.
We are not heckling. We are critiquing.
There's a difference.
Yes.
Anyway. Xbox, we heckle.
Oh, yes.
Nintendo, we lovingly encourage.
We heckle because we want what's best for our audience. And
if Microsoft hadn't pulled like all the, you know, bumfuckery that they were doing with the launch of the Xbox One, we
would. By the way, that's your one.
I know. We wouldn't have given them as much crap. But they did. So we did. So Nintendo, please, don't make us give you crap.
No, we don't. We like Nintendo. We just want what's best for you.
Nintendo is like the little brother that you're just trying to look out for.
Exactly.
It's like, he doesn't know any better. Stop eating rocks. You know? No, don't ask that girl out. You got no chance. That kind
of
thing.
She's out of your league, buddy. Just back it up a few steps.
No, you can't do a music video. You don't have any musical talent. Please. All right. We'll take it.
All right.
On that note, we'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about movies. Chad's got a review.
The Geek Cave presents Real Heroes of Geekiness.
Real Heroes of Geekiness.
Today, we salute you, Mr. Comic-Based Movie Nitpicker.
Mr. Comic-Based Movie Nitpicker!
When a comic book movie is made, you make the effort to make sure that everyone knows what Hollywood got wrong.
That's supposed to be yellow!
Sure, getting every detail correct in a continuity that spans 70 years is impossible. But only you could find 4 errors in a movie that only has 3.
Good eye on that one!
So tune in to The Geek Cave, oh detector of details, cause if anyone is going to keep these guys honest, it's you.
Mr. Comic-Based Movie Nitpicker!
Download it monthly on iTunes or Podbean.com. The Geek Cave Podcast, brought to you by BuzzTime. Great minds drink alike. And Shirtosaurus.com. We dig up clothing from your past so you can look rad today.
And welcome back to the Geek Cave Podcast. I'm Darren.
No, you're not.
My hair's all grown back.
I'm just seeing what you would do.
Gotta keep. I was hoping you had something you to follow up with.
No.
You are clearly 1980s Lex Luthor with the long red hair.
And he's Chad.
All right.
And he's Chad,
I'm
yes.
I'm Chad.
On the Deep Cave Satellite, oh, love.
Yeah. All right, let's see if we can get through this without having to call me back up on a... You know, on a walkie-talkie or something.
Well, you know, space sucks.
Breaker 19.
Yeah. Movies!
Movies!
All right. Mrs. Doubtfire 2 is sucks. Apparently a thing, and it will be starring Robin Williams. Now, I'm a fan of many of Robin Williams' roles, and I find myself hoping that it's going to be good. It won't be, but I'm hoping it will be. If anything, it does mean that we'll get to see someone other than Tyler Perry dress up like an old woman.
I hope that they paint him blue and it's really the genie from Aladdin as Mrs. Doubtfire.
So there's a new Studio Ghibli film, When Marnie Was There. It's coming. All there really is right now is a teaser poster and some images, so I don't really know anything else about the movie. If you would like to know more, then I'd recommend reading the book by Joan G. Robinson.
All right.
Good. There's going to be a Goosebumps movie.
Yay.
Bad, it stars Jack Black.
Aww.
Good, it appears to be catering in part to adults who read the books as teens.
Yay.
Bad, it's directed by the guy that directed Gulliver's Travels, the Jack Black version.
Aww.
So, yeah. Watch Dogs, the video game, is getting ready to release in like a week or two from when we're recording.
Yeah.
And what better way to celebrate that than to watch a movie version of Watch Dogs as written by the guys who wrote Zombieland and G.I. Joe Retaliation.
If I were to call my friends dogs and I would say, hey, let's watch Watch Dogs, dogs.
Ubisoft, stick to games.
Please.
You do those pretty well.
Yeah.
Now, I will say I did like Zombieland.
Yeah.
I did too. And I watched G.I. Joe Retaliation and it was worth it once.
Yeah, it's inoffensive.
Kind of like G.I. Joe, Land. The Rise of Cobra.
Yeah, Rise of Cobra is the same thing. It's inoffensive once.
Yes, and beyond that, it gets kind of...
Beyond that, you can use it as a weapon.
And Duke's in a coma.
Yeah. So, did you? And now he's not.
No. That's. Hey everyone! I just heard Dude's okay. Yay!
We'll never see him again.
Yeah.
He also had plastic surgery, so his face looks totally different now.
Hmm. So Barbie is getting a live action movie.
Yep.
I'm going to let that sink in for just a second or two.
Who is the most plastic actress that we can get to play her?
Kristen Stewart.
Yeah, I was just thinking that.
Now,
what?
Now, done right, I think this could be a remarkably empowering and worthwhile, you know, movie.
But it's
in
Barbie.
My head.
Yeah.
Well, in my head, the best way to do this is assume that all those different Barbies that you could buy, you know, lawyer Barbie, pilot Barbie, teacher Barbie, you know, all those things. What if Barbie really is that brilliant? Like, Barbie is a pretender. You know, she can do all these things. She's very smart, so on and so forth. Then I can actually see that this could work. You have kind of this incredibly smart and savvy, beautiful woman who can actually do a lot of things. The worst thing that they can do in this movie is for Barbie to be the stereotype airhead that's only useful for looking pretty and changing clothes.
And I bet I know what they're going to do.
Yeah, you know what I think? I have two hopes for this movie. While your idea of one woman being all of these different things is excellent, I like to think that there's going to be that each individual Barbie, you know, lawyer Barbie, Malibu, whatever, they're Barbies from different dimensions. And, you know,
there's a Barbie-verse.
There's a Barbie-verse. And there's one evil that's so heinous that it takes all of these Barbies to come together and stop it. Also, I would like the phrase, come on, Barbie, let's go party, at least once in this movie.
Oh, yeah. If they don't use Barbie Girl as, like, part of the soundtrack, then they have failed
the
city.
They have failed.
They have failed this city.
You know, it's like an American Werewolf in London not getting the rights to Werewolves of London.
I know, right?
It's like, really?
Right.
No,
all right.
My only wish list item is that Michael Keaton is 10.
He's busy working on Birdman, too.
True.
Mm. So Netflix is going to raise their rates again. Now, if you already have Netflix, your rates will actually stay the same. Stay the same. I will get this out for a while.
Yeah, they say a generous period, but they don't say how long.
But then they will raise it. Yeah. Now, this has already happened in the European markets, and the existing subscribers, I believe I read they had like a year or two before their rates went up. And personally, I'm fine with a small rate hike as the service is worth it to me. That being said, Netflix really should be doing a better job of getting more recent material to sell the product.
Yes.
It's nice when they get shows like Arrow just a season late. You know, How I Met Your Mother is coming pretty much right away at the end of season. But it's been 6 months since I've had a Phineas and Ferb update.
I know.
Yeah.
And you know, things like that, I really want them to bring to the forefront. I want to see them getting stuff that it's on TV, and then the very next season we're getting it. Not, okay, suddenly they're going to drop 8 seasons of House MD on me 3 years after House ends his run.
Yeah.
I mean, I like the TV show House for the most part, but it was really late to be getting it.
Yeah, I'm kind of that way as far as the movies go. I mean, I know that it's mostly these movie studios have all kind of strong-armed them into, like, well, you know, you're digging into our rent, our movie sales. No, because if I wasn't going to buy your movie at the first place until I watched it, I'm still not going to buy it until I get to rent it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not doing you any favors. But for whatever reason, Netflix is like, okay. So most movies don't even hit Netflix until 3 to 6 months after they've hit DVD.
Yeah.
And by that time, I've forgotten about your movie. I never saw it in theaters, and now I don't care.
There you go.
That has been pretty much what I've done. I was telling a friend of mine that since I got a subscription to Netflix, my DVD budget has gone way down. I just don't have a need to buy DVDs anymore, which kind of feeds into their argument. But the other thing I've discovered is I've stopped watching a lot of movies at home.
Yeah.
I use Netflix almost exclusively to watch TV shows and cartoons.
Yeah.
Because the movies awesome. That they have, the movies that they have are so dated by the time I get there. I mean, yeah, was it nice to be able to go back and watch Herbert West Reanimator? Yeah, it was nice to rewatch that and remember fondly a comic book that I still don't have a copy of.
Yeah, Chris Jones. You said you'd hook a brother up. Maybe. I don't know.
But the other side of that is, you know, Catching Fire's out on DVD. I didn't get a chance to see it in the theater. I'd kind of like to see it. But by the time it finally gets on Netflix, chances are I'm not going to care enough to watch it.
Yeah. I mean, it probably won't even hit Netflix until the third movie hits theaters.
Yeah.
That's a very, very real possibility. Speaking of Netflix, something good that they're about to do is they're going to start being available as a service on DVRs. So you can get your Roku, you can get your Apple TV, and now on your DVR that are TiVo enabled, I think.
Yeah.
So that's something. And it's another service that's getting Netflix that doesn't require some kind of premium membership to access it. Because only a fool would pay extra in order to access Netflix.
Right.
Then again, who would be stupid enough to sell a premium membership for something that only... I don't know. So Ray Fisher is going to play Cyborg in Man of Steel 2. Who is this Superman fellow anyway?
Really, yeah.
I'm glad they got this character because the movie was certainly in need of some diversity. However, by this time, I mean, we've got Superman, Batman, Gal Gadot as Wonder Woman. Now we've got Ray Fisher as Cyborg. I'm starting to think that Henry Cavill is actually pregnant and he can't do any action scenes. And so all these other members of the DC Pantheon are being brought in to cover for him.
Nice.
On a serious note, I think it shows that Warner Brothers actually has no faith whatsoever in a Man of Steel sequel.
I think that's probably true.
Because, you know...
I think that's well-deserved.
Well, that may be. But I enjoyed Man of Steel. But, you know, when they threw Batman in, I thought, okay, this is a logical progression, you know, building toward Justice League. But I really do think they're doing Marvel's Phase 1 in reverse.
Mm-hmm.
Because they started with Superman, and which, by the way, Man of Steel was not a Superman movie. It was a Clark Kent movie.
Yes.
But now it's Superman, as you said, Batman, Wonder Woman, Cyborg. The Rock keeps saying, maybe Green Lantern. You know, he keeps teasing at that. So we've got 5/7 of the of the Justice League potentially in this movie. Which, you know, reminds me of the theory that I had, that really the Justice League had been existing all along, and then Superman shows up and he does this public screw-up.
Mm-hmm.
In Clark's first adventure in the suit, mind you. So, of course, things don't go well. Of course, those things don't go Supermanly. He's not Superman yet. But, so Batman just comes to rein him in, and that is what I think is going to be the story between Batman versus Superman. Or as... we call it here Justice League.
Yep.
Good enough. That is actually the news that I have. Do you have any news for us, Justin?
The only thing I got is Peter Jackson has officially come out and said what the title of the third Hobbit movie is going to be.
Okay.
What? You say it's not going to be There and Back Again like it always has been? No! It's going to be the Battle of the Five Armies.
Because screw you.
That's much more marketable.
Yes, but it's also a part in the book that was glossed over because at the time the Battle of the Five Armies happened, Bilbo was unconscious and didn't see any of it.
Well, you know, I mean...
And so basically...
We need an excuse to make this a 3-movie film.
And that's exactly... Yeah. They're going to pad this out with that, you know, big epic battle that actually didn't happen in the book. It's like, okay, you're going to name it after something that... You're making up for a piece of fiction.
Did you see what the original title was supposed to be?
I thought it was, you know, There and Back Again.
No, there was like another title they played with. Tom wrote about it on geekcavepodcast.com. I don't remember it, but it sounded like the name of like an 80s hair band. Like War Rising or something like that. The Hobbit War Rising.
Mm. Oh, I guess I do have one more bit of news.
Hello, St. Louis. We are War Rising.
Ha. The other bit of news that I do have is so I'm blaming, I think, Twilight for something.
Okay.
And it's a distressing trend that I'm seeing in movies now. And The Hobbit ended up doing it. And then the Hunger Games movies and then the Divergence movie. We do not actually probably it started with Harry Potter. Harry Potter did it. I blame you, Harry Potter. Making your last movie of a series into two movies is really, really getting ridiculous.
Jerkish.
I understand that there was a huge amount of material in the Deathly Hallows. I understand. There was also a huge amount of material in the Goblet of Fire, but you were able to edit that down. You know, the Road movie, also known as Harry Potter 7.1, you could have edited that down a lot and still had enough room for the big battle of Hogwarts. Hobbit, at best, should have been a two-movie thing. At best. You know, there need not be three movies. Twilight making that third and fourth atrocity? You've got to be kidding. And yes, I realize there's four books. They could have shot three and four together.
Yeah.
And it would have been a better movie. It wouldn't have been a better love story than Tony Stark and Banner.
And himself.
Yeah, but it close. And now Hunger Games has said that their third book is going to be made into two movies.
Of course.
And Divergent, an untested, unknown property, is already planned to get four movies out of three books. I read the books. The books are fine. They are in the same kind of dystopian vein as The Hunger Games, but they're also just as shallow. You don't need to go too deep with them, and you certainly don't need two movies at the end to wrap it up. So that is my commentary on what I see as a distressing trend, specifically in teen movies.
Yeah.
The paranormal romance and teen movie stuff. And last but not least, for those of you who are Monty Python fans, you need to go to geekcavepodcast.com, scroll down, you know, tag TGC Liz, and look for the Monty Python stuff.
Yes.
Yeah. Good stuff.
Because there is something there that if you are not pleased to see, you cannot call yourself a Monty Python fan. Mm. Can't do it. I don't care how much you like Holy Grail, I don't care that you can quote the parrot sketch verbatim. If you are not excited to see this report, you do not get to call yourself a fan.
Okay.
Nope.
So, now, real quick before you review another book to film thing, you know, you want to guess what books will not be becoming movies?
Oh, do tell.
The Star Wars Expanded Universe.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, Justin said that no one cares about these anymore anyway.
Justin, did you say that?
I may or may not have been present when such things were said.
Okay. See, Chase, I was a big fan of the Thrawn trilogy and Shadows of the Empire, which, you know, George Lucas...
I really enjoyed the Han Solo trilogy. No, the one where Han's growing up.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed that one.
But, you know, George Lucas signed off on these things, you know. He said they were a part of the official canon. And now they're not. Lucasfilm released a statement saying that we're going to go things in a different direction. They did say that we might use elements of the expanded universe. Some of those elements will appear in Star Wars Rebels, as Greg was talking about at the beginning of the show. And that's good. But I know a lot of fans are going to be really upset because now there's no guarantee you'll see Mara Jade, you know, Luke Skywalker's wife. There's no guarantee you'll see the Solo twins or anything of that. So
I'm strangely okay with this.
Yeah.
Well, it's been my experience in well, in some of the better comic book movies, that when you fiddle a little bit with the stories, you come up with a better product.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of people who are going to be really upset about this are going to be very deep, loving, caring fans of the books. But books and movies are not the same.
Yeah.
They are a far different medium. And I think that being able to pay homage to the expanded universe without being beholden to that universe is probably going to lend to better storytelling overall.
That's a very good point.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh,
Mike dropped, and let's carry on.
Before we forget, MST3K could be coming back.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, Mystery Science Theater. TGC Liz. Liz wrote up an article. You can find that on our geektapepodcast.com as well, how Joel wants to bring the series back. And I say go for it. Yeah, as an internet thing. And I say go for it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Riff Trax has had some phenomenal success, and that's with Mike and Kevin and Bill, you know, the last people to be involved with the show.
Right.
And that is a huge success. I love it. I recommend it every chance I get. So I would love to see an old school style MST3K, but new material.
Right.
You know, not even for new movies. You can go back to riffing old B movies from the, you know, 70s and 80s, and that'd be great. That's the only way some of those are tolerable.
Or even Man of Steel. See, I'm willing to say it too.
Yeah, well, I'm sure there'll be a Riff Trax for Man of Steel.
Oh, yes.
But
and I'll buy it.
Oh, yeah. But no, I would love to see Joel and Crow and Servo back together again.
It'd be great. All right, Chad, I think I'm done interrupting.
That's quite all right. Did you have any extra news, Darren?
No.
All right.
Justin?
I'm good.
All right.
Then I guess we're ready for X-Men, the first class.
Kent, if you would be so kind as to get us started.
And now, it's time for Chad Savage's Random Movie Review.
All right. We are recording on Saturday afternoon. I watched this movie on Wednesday evening, and I wrote this review yesterday, Friday. 2 days. 2 days is the span of time, and so the summary I'm going to offer you is the absolute best my memory can muster after 2 days. We start in Poland during World War II, reusing footage from the first X-Men movie, because reasons. And we see the genesis of Magneto. After his experience with the nicest Nazis in the land, he is taken to Kevin Bacon, who kills Magneto's mother to get the kid to move a coin. Ironically, this fails. Though the kid is able to crush or move every other piece of metal in the room and the room next door. So, by the way, I'm sure that Kevin Bacon actually has a character name, but I don't remember it. Turns out it's not important. I do remember that it's German, so I'm going to substitute as many good German villains as I can in an effort to first class this movie up. So anyway, after this, Major Heinrich Strasser decides to take Magneto under his wing and teach him how to kill everyone except for himself. Okay, so cross the pond to a palatial estate somewhere in Too Rich, USA, and we have a young mind reader that doesn't understand body language, voice tone, syntax, or really anything else about people because he's too busy being smart. Something happens in this scene, and we're introduced to Jennifer Lawrence playing Rebecca Romijn's younger self, playing Mystique, or Raven, as this movie calls her. Reasons, and everyone gets a little older, except for Kevin Bacon's Eric von Eberhard, because his mutation is eternal Kevin Baconness.
And what a problem to have.
Yes, indeed. Magneto, apparently he kills Nazis trying to find Major Arnold Tote and leads him all over. And this, This leads him all over the world before finally finding Auric Goldfinger and losing him because he can't lift a submarine with his mind. In fact, he tries to drown himself in an effort to do so. Backtracking just a little bit now. We're introduced to a female CIA agent whose name is also unimportant because she shows exactly her worth early in the film by stripping down to her underwear and blending in with a bunch of, I think call girls is the polite term, leading one to realize that Frau Farbissina has the worst security team ever, as they should have realized that they were one hooker heavy. Perhaps the pimp was having a deal. I don't know. Schedule 12, get a baker's dozen. By the way, I do want to assure that it is very fortuitous that she wanted to feel sexy while on the stakeout, because I'm pretty sure that my stakeout underwear would not be so alluring. The CIA agent, you know, I can't even come up with a funny name for her. You know, Madam Jigglyboob, I guess. She discovers that mutants exist and tracks down Xavier, because by this point, Xavier is the leading authority on mutations. And he tries to pick her up with a 7-year-old line. It doesn't work, like most of the movie. Something, something, something. And now Xavier and Magneto work for the CIA. And thus begins the mutant treasure hunt to find the least useful mutants in the land, with the exception of Wolverine. Though it is my opinion that they actually found a lot of worthwhile mutants, and those mutants had the good sense to, like Wolverine, tell these two to fuck right off.
Yeah.
Wolverine, by the way, here is suffering from Benjamin Button's disease, as he looks older here than ever again. But we get this team together, and they're all hiding out at a CIA safe house or bunker or something, being guarded by the absolute worst agents in the world to guard or protect or defend a bunch of mutants, as Dr. Strangelove has his teleportation mutant kill a whole bunch of these people. And then one of the good guys, I put good guys in quotation marks here, one of the good guys gets killed in spectacular fashion, and I would feel bad about this, but I don't care. Something, 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 and now it's time to train, and we get to see Xavier run, which will be kind of darkly ironic later. Otherwise, the montage is played for laughs and is ultimately pointless because we don't care about these mutants. I would actually – it would class this movie up to have this montage of them training with the training montage song from Team America World Police. something, 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 Cuban Missile Crisis.
Yeah.
Barney Stinson moment, you know, suit up. And then boss fight. Magneto, yep. Magneto kills Dr. Christian Schell in one of the film's best sequences, and then decides to take his place by donning the silly hat of Dr. Julius No. exposition, exposition. Shoot Xavier in the back. His closest friend, Mystique, Raven, whatever her name is, abandons him because Xavier is an idiot and doesn't understand that she's having real identity issues. And the movie ends with an amnesia kiss, because that is the best way ever to end a superhero movie.
Hey, it's been done before.
It's been proven, yes.
Yes. Now, not all of this movie is terrible. It really isn't. And we're coming to a close here. This is, we're almost done. The movie's assets and liabilities can be summed up pretty easily. Assets: the relationship between Xavier and Magneto. I really got to understand how in the first X-Men movie, these two still cared for each other. You know, they may be on opposite sides of a conflict, at least in terms of their approach to the conflict. But you can see how they became friends. Liabilities, everything else. So with the understanding that the relationship between Xavier and Magneto is the absolute strongest part of the movie. I recommend that you watch Brokeback Mountain.
Ah.
Change the names of the main characters to Charles and Eric, and you have the best parts of this movie, minus the killing of Hans Gruber, in an idyllic Western setting. Now, after watching the four, quote, official X-Men movies, leaving out the Wolverine things, this is actually the one that broke my will to see Days of Future Past. I am not planning on seeing Days of Future Past in the theater now. I will wait until it comes out on DVD. I will borrow it from Darren. I'll probably watch it once, and I'll probably be done. If it's anything like the rest of them, I would say see First Class with friends once, and then let it sit on your shelf until you decide to whittle down your collection to make room for the Toxic Avenger series. My four-word review of this movie is inexplicably acclaimed, oddly forgettable.
All right. I guess I'll have to do the X-Men Days of Future Past review.
At least the theater release, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Hopefully they don't take away my pen and paper while I'm taking notes.
Hopefully not. Well, granted, we wouldn't want to do a whole bunch of spoilers for that one. It would be more of a case of being able to say, yeah, it was good.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't good.
It'll probably be for me along the lines of, yeah, I liked it. Chad's going to hate it.
This is a whole bunch more of the same. And as a whole bunch more of the same, yeah, you're getting what you're paid for.
Yeah. Plus popcorn.
Before
we wrap up, breaking news, actually. Tom just sent this in. Now, this is breaking for the day we're taping. But you can, of course, find this at dkpodcast.com. You know that dig going on in Arizona for the landfill of E.T. cartridges?
Oh, yeah.
They found them.
Excavators
have found the E.T. cartridges in Alamogordo, New Mexico, 31 years after they were buried. Ladies and gentlemen,
any of them not
like,
broken?
Well, they're Atari cassettes, so the most part, they're probably still workable. They're still working. But, ladies and gentlemen, it's like the moon landing.
There you go.
Except crappier.
So does that mean that the copy of E.T. that you played is now more or less valuable?
Probably less, because they just found like thousands of them in the desert.
True, but Rachel had you autograph that one.
That's true, so it's even less. Because now
that's funny.
Now it's been defaced. So anyway, there you go. There's your. Usually these people wait until after we do a taping, and then something big happens. But since we did our taping later today than we usually do, then we were able to gotcha this time. So you'll find out about that at dkpodcast.com. Chad, you got anything else?
I do not.
Awesome. Well, again, big thank you, super thank you to Lucasfilm and Greg Wiseman for taking some time and spending it with this little podcast.
Yes.
At the beginning of the show, which, by the way, has now reached 23,000 listeners on a monthly basis.
And we love you all individually. The line forms to the left.
Yep.
Darren, we're going to need a lot of water.
Yeah.
I need to stay hydrated if I'm going to be doing stuff like this.
Wait, I thought we were just shaking their hands.
Some of them.
Deep Cave Podcast on Twitter, facebook.com/Deep Cave. Deep Cave is brought to you by BuzzTime and Shirtosaurus. Be sure to check us out on social media for your chance to win prizes like Justice League War. And, just stay in the conversation. So, for Chad, for Justin, for Kent Harris, and for the 23,000 of you now who are listening, why are you here?
Thanks for listening. Everyone is a geek for something.